I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I was a big believer of listening to... I'm a big believer of only listening to people who have achieved what you want to achieve. Like, I was listening to podcasts with the people that built, you know, $5, $10, $20 million portfolios and listening to how they got there.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyron Sharm, and in this episode, we're back with Zach Ristio. Possessing a $3.7 million portfolio at only 27 years old, he's more than eager to disclose vital advice, sharing strong saving habits, how to subdivide, and an anecdote about the property that kicked it off. Ristio has much to say. Also, he tells us about the time that tenants ran out of a property. Everyone has to start somewhere. For Ristio, the very first property was the most important one, as it paved a strong foundation for him to continue developing his portfolio. Thus, he discloses his personal criteria for a strong first investment that can set up a neat domino effect into success.
It's an old home, like, because I'm going to be knocking down these properties eventually. I don't need the house to be in too good of a nick. I don't want it falling down after the first month, but as long as it's standing for 5-10 years, that's fine. It doesn't need to be too crash hot. So I'm trying to find as much value in that land. Like, I bought 700 square meters in this suburb, and 700 square meters was going for 400k at the time. So essentially just bought land and got a free house on top. So the criteria for, like, I kept the first purchase pretty simple. It was simply, all right, what can I afford? 400k, how close can I get to that CBD for that price bracket? Okay, this area, all right, subdivision potential, as much value in the land. And that was pretty simple criteria for that first purchase, Tyron. I didn't overcomplicate it, or else I would have been looking for months and months and months, and it would have just chewed up the time and potentially would have priced me out of the market. So I kept it pretty simple and wanted these 3-4 things. And as soon as it popped up, I chucked a few offers in. And I remember at the time I offered 390 as the first offer, and they said no, and I said, okay, 395, and they said no, and I said, shit, am I going to do 400? And I thought, last offer, 400, all right, just whatever. And then it got accepted. And now, looking back at it now, that property's probably grown, you know, it's grown probably, I'll say, 80%. So whether I paid 390, 395, 400, it doesn't really matter now.
It doesn't matter, yeah. When we go back in hindsight, then you always go, man, you know, I don't care how much I pay for it. Back then, it was a lot of money, a few grand in, a few there, because it's your hard-earned money, especially when you're actually trying to get your first property. Same for that deposit, it's always the most challenging part. I'm assuming you got 20% on that one and plus fees and stuff, or how did you go about?
I did 10% deposit. I paid a bit of LMI. The reason for that was 20% of my money, 20% of deposit was going to be pretty much all my money, and I wanted a bit of wiggle room, buffer room. So I opted for the 10%, which was around 60K at the time. And the LMI was, I think it was a 12% deposit, to be honest, exactly. The broker sort of said, this is the sweet spot where you're not going to pay too much LMI. And then, so he worked around that, but I was happy to pay the cost to sort of get in early and not put all my money into the deal. And I think the LMI at the time was a few grand, like, big deal. It was just the cost of doing business at the time. So I did that, and yeah, it was a good decision for me. I was able to save sort of 50K in deposit and leave that in my bank account for a rainy day. So it made sense to me.
Oh, absolutely. And if you can get into a property as minimal as possible with as minimal fees and so forth, and get a fantastic deal, it just adds value so much. And there's no point, you know, tying so much cash in there, because then you want to be able to draw that capital or that cash back out eventually to be able to buy your next property, which is what I'm assuming you've done next.
Yeah. So it was a very good first purchase. I'll stress the importance of your first buy being a good one. That will just catapult you into the further properties. But if you get your first one wrong, it would just sort of put you back by 5-10 years. So the importance of that first one being good is very important. I can't stress it enough.
I totally agree. So let's talk about your other properties that you've done. How many properties have you purchased since then?
So then after that, I took a sort of a couple year break, more savings, more learnings. And then it was in the middle of COVID where there was another property purchased. And that was at a time where there was doom and gloom in the media and this and that, and don't buy or it's going to drop out, property's going to fall out the sky or it's going to go crazy or this. And there's so much noise out there. And I was like, okay, what's going to happen? And we just spent the time sort of educating ourselves about COVID and how money works in regards to currencies and inflation and deflation. And we saw an opportunity where in the middle of COVID, there was this period where there was a deflationary period at first where people were hoarding their money. They were scared, which is fair enough, that it was all new to everyone. And they were just saving. Nothing was open. They couldn't spend their money. The government started printing out all these millions and billions of dollars, handing it out to people to try and stimulate the economy. So people were sitting at home. They were saving a lot of money. They were still receiving a lot of their full-time salary, and a lot of people were receiving these COVID payments. So people were actually becoming wealthier. the savings were accumulating. So we thought, hang on, what's going to happen when the economy opens up with interest rates already very low, and people with all this extra credit, they've been printing like crazy, the government, what's going to happen? It's going to transfer into assets and goods when the world opens up again. So we identified this opportunity and thought, okay, we can see property sort of going up a bit quite here, and acted, and the second property was purchased in the middle of COVID, and great time to buy. There was no competition and we secured the second house, a couple of years after the first one, and very similar criteria to the first property, older home on a larger parcel of land, subdivision potential, just in a different pocket of Adelaide. It's in a suburb called Camden Park, which is behind the famous Glenelg suburb pretty much. So that was a second purchase, and essentially that's been another great buy. So that was a second purchase, Tyrone.
Excellent. And how far was that particular property from the CBD?
That one's even closer. I think 8 Ks. It's about a 10-minute drive to the CBD, and we paid $750 for it. And it sounds funny to you Sydney guys, but that's the prices in Adelaide.
that's still very reasonable. To what you've got around in Adelaide, it's very reasonable. Because I looked at a property down there. I was looking at doing development down there, and I was like, yeah, this is great prices. I mean, obviously, you can't compare Sydney and Melbourne because we've gone crazy with prices. But in Adelaide, those are generally the price that we were looking at pay back in COVID.
You're right. Yeah, that's what we paid, and it's in a 10 out of 10 location. In my opinion, it's probably the pick of the bunch out of the properties we got. So that was purchased in the middle of COVID when there was all this noise. We just sort of had this bulletproof approach. We ignored the noise. We weren't too worried about the short term metrics. We're thinking about decades ahead, not years. So we acted upon it, and it's been a great decision.
Yeah. And you mentioned we. Is that you and your buyer's agency, or you're talking about someone else together that you're working with?
This is me and my partner. This is all collectively us as a team. It's us. So I talk about the portfolio and this and that, and this one is port, this one is bought. It's us all together. Me and my partner, who we met when we were young, 17, 18, and we are getting married at the end of this year, actually. So it's been a really good journey, and a little sort of hack: when you find someone who is aligned with you in the same goals, values, is heading in the same direction as you, it's like a rocket ship. When you got two people trying to achieve the same goal rather than one person, it's double the knowledge, double the finances, it's just turbocharge everything. So meeting Esmeralda when we were young has been great, and this has been our journey, and we've done pretty well out of it.
Congrats. That's really exciting. And when you do find or have that life partner who's also on the same journey, then at least you guys are going on that journey together to be able to achieve the same outcome or achieving that same goal. And that makes a huge difference, because I've met a lot of people who have on opposite ends, and usually it's only one side who will just drive it and the other side sort of pulling them back. So, yeah, when you have that great relationship, it just makes a huge difference.
Exactly. It's just turbocharged everything, Tyron. Yeah, it's been awesome together. It's been all a team effort.
Wonderful. So about the second property, tell us a little bit about have you done anything to it, or has it just been basically rented out and just added to your portfolio?
The second one's just sitting there at the moment. That's just being rented as is. It's the first one which we've knocked down, and there's two nice double garage homes going up on it. We just got booked the demo in, actually, and that's happening as we speak. So we're knocking that house down and building two nice double garage homes. And that's just essentially going to double the equity position, you know, triple, quadruple the rents, and just have it. Yeah, that would be there'll be a bit of fat in that deal, based on the numbers. So once that's complete, it would just be as simple as redrawing the equity again and going again. But yeah, that's the sort of process at the moment, Tyron.
Excellent. And how long is that project going to take to develop those two houses?
Well, yeah, the building industry at the moment, they'll tell you one thing and then another thing happens, but they're probably looking at, about a year and a half once we sort of started the whole signing of this and that. But in regards to the actual build time, yeah, probably looking at 12 months. So, before we know it, they'll be here. Two new shiny homes. Yeah, exactly. All the approval's done. It's just a matter of waiting for the builders to rock up with their tools, and away they go. So everything's been signed, approved on that end. Just a matter of them building it now.
Excellent. So that's your second property. Have you purchased any more since then?
There was a third one. The goal in our 20s was to build an asset base first there wasn't a set number, between two and four properties in our 20s. Just build an asset base first of three to, two to four properties, or properties that are subdivision potential, so that eventually that asset base will double. Or if we build three on them, we'll see what happens, what we do. But the goal was to build an asset base first. So we spent another 2 years after that second property of more savings, more learnings, and come 2022, I can't remember exactly when it was, but we bought our third property. And similar criteria as the first two, Tyron. It was just an older house on a larger piece of land, 700 square meters, 24 meter frontage. And just in another pocket of Adelaide, it's in a suburb called Woodville West, which is probably 10Ks northwest of the Adelaide CBD. And we paid in low sevens for that. 95% of the value of that property is in the land, older house. But we're going to be knocking down that eventually, so we're not too worried about that. So that was a third purchase. And if you sort of map our three properties on a map, they're almost like in a big triangle around the Adelaide CBD. We believe in sort of, people talk about diversification and this and that, and we believe in specialization over diversification. If you're really good at one thing, why would you sort of deviate from that? We know the best streets, the best suburbs, all the council zoning, got the contacts. Like, it wouldn't make sense for us to sort of divert away from that. We're going to pay a bit more in sort of things like land tax, but the pros we're going to get from all those other things I just mentioned are going to outweigh that. So it doesn't make a sense for us to sort of diversify when we've got such a good understanding of what's happening here in our own backyard. We're just targeting different areas of Adelaide. That's our sort of diversification. But we know the tricks and whatnot here. So we're Adelaide investors.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a wise decision, because with development, it's also being an expert in the area in order to be able to do those. Because if you don't focus on the area, it's very easy to get confused with so many. Like, I know people are trying to do developments in different states and the rules are different in every single state. But if you just focus on the one area, you can do it really well and then just keep replicating and then you become that expert. And then every time you find a property within that local area, you know immediately how much you think that property is worth because you've been doing so much research in it, and therefore you can turn it into a good buy or if it's not. So it saves a lot of time. That's how real estate is played, isn't it?
That's essentially why we specialize over diversify. We've got the knowledge here, so it wouldn't make sense for us to go buy in another state where we know absolutely nothing about. So that's our sort of just our strategy, I suppose.
Coming up after the break, Ristio reveals how he handled a runner.
So I decided to go to the property and knock on the door, see what was going on. And the house was completely empty. And I was like, okay, all the furniture had been removed. Cupboards were empty. And what the hell's going on here? And essentially, they had just done a runner.
He warns readers to choose wise role models in a world of social media.
I see people talking about property portfolios and never built one themselves. And I see coaches talk about how to be successful and they've never really been successful themselves, and just say, be careful who you follow. Make sure they have achieved what you want to achieve, because there is a lot of smoke and mirrors out there these days on social media.
He imparts comforting wisdom about setting goals.
Having two really good properties is better than five average ones. And I would say most people overestimate what they can do in 1 year, but underestimate what they can achieve in 10 years. So had I thought I was going to be here where I was 10 years ago, probably not.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Although Ristio does an excellent job of selling his property journey as a smooth sale, he has his own ebbs and waves too. For anyone wondering how you can make sure your tenants pay their rent, you can't. Sometimes they run. Thankfully, Ristio reveals what to do in this scenario.
I had an interesting story with that first property not too long ago, where I had the same tenants in there for 3 to 4 years, and they were great tenants. They were paying their rent on time, hardly any issues, until one day the rent money stopped coming in, and I thought, okay, maybe they just forgot. Sent them a gentle reminder through text informing them the rent is due. Didn't hear back. Next week came, missed the rent money again. Okay. Third week came, missed the rent money again. I was like, all right, what the hell's going on here? They've gone from paying rent every week for 4 years straight to missing 3 weeks in a row. I was trying to get a hold of them. They weren't picking up. Couldn't get in contact with them. So I decided to go to the property and knock on the door, see what was going on. And the house was completely empty. And I was like, okay, all the furniture had been removed. Cupboards were empty. And what the hell's going on here? And essentially, they had just done a runner. we spent a week trying to locate them and finally got a hold of them, and they just said we had left. And I was like, all right, thanks for the 4 years type of thing. See you later. All right, that's strange. Thanks, but no thanks. And they, the inside of the house was tidy, to be fair. So that was nice and clean. But, then we walked into the shed, and the shed was absolute full of mess from the roof to the ground. It was covered. Anything and everything was in this shed, you could imagine. It was pretty gross. So we were thinking, how are we going to clean this? And the inside of the house was clean, but the shed was a mess. So it was like this awkward, all right, how do we tenant this thing out? So what we decided to do was because we wanted to get this thing rented out ASAP, because every week we're missing out $450 worth of rent. So what we learned is we could rent out a property and exclude an area. So it was re-letted, but the shed was excluded from the tenancy, and it was a cool thing that I didn't know you could do. I had to drop my rent by 5-10% because there was no shed included in the tenancy, but it made sense because the speed at which I was able to get this thing rented out again far outweighed the cost of waiting a couple of weeks to get this shed clean. So that was a little sort of interesting moment there where it looked like it was the worst thing in the world, and then we eventually worked it out. So a little lesson from there was, don't panic. There is, when there is a will, there's always a way. So that was a little interesting investing moment there, but we got there in the end.
That's fascinating. And did you use a property manager to manage the property at the time, or did you manage it yourself?
Yeah, I've always had property managers, some good ones, some not so. Some property managers that they don't do a whole lot, in my opinion, but then there's some that are great. So I'll try and look for the great ones. So I've always had a manager looking after him. But
I'm just curious why that property manager took so long to be able to take any action. 3 weeks later is a long time to not get rent paid. You should have just went across and had a look, you know, within the week.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, but there's these rules. Yeah. Yeah, no, Tyron, you're telling me, so don't worry. That's what I was saying, the same thing too.
Yeah, fair enough. That's what happens. I think it's all part of the journey and learning and so forth, because I've been through that as well. I've had an agent do exactly that for me, except that they had a tenant that just, yeah, messed up the place. So lucky you had a tenant go rather than the place that messed up, because it took me years to be able to get that out of our tribunal and paid all that back.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's another story for another time. So let's talk about maybe a moment along your journey. What's been the biggest aha moment for you during this property journey that you built up these properties in your portfolio?
Probably that the third property was the aha moment, because we'd gotten to a stage where we had acquired two properties already, and then there was essentially enough equity in that first property where we didn't have to contribute much of our own money for a deposit for that third one. It was like, okay, here, this is the power of compounding and leverage, and that clicked in, where we essentially used the bank's money to produce another deposit for us, and all we had invested was that initial 60K for that first property, which now turned into a second deposit for another property. And we thought, hang on, okay, if we can do this for 4, 5, 6 properties, it would turn into this just self-sufficient beast. So that was probably the aha moment for us, Tyron.
Yeah, that is always something that I think whenever I speak to a person who's just starting our property and then they look back in hindsight after building a few properties, it's just that phenomenal understanding that you can do so much with property in terms of that, because like it's all about leverage. That first one's always the hardest, but once you get past that first one, the rest is all about understanding the systems and the finance and knowing how you can actually leverage the system to your advantage.
Exactly. Once you're in, there's probably a good chance that property is going to be growing more in value than you can save. So the quicker you can get in, the better.
It is totally. Everyone, I think, should probably understand, know that principle, but it's not enough out there. Especially, it's good that you, coming from a younger generation, to be able to share that. I think we're all very grateful to hear that as well from you. So let's jump into the mindset side of things. You spend a lot of time in the car listening to podcasts. Did you have any other particularly potential mentors or anyone that would have helped you? I mean, you mentioned your father-in-law who was a town planner, but was there anyone else that you also looked up to?
I was a big believer of listening to... I'm a big believer of only listening to people who have achieved what you want to achieve. Like, I was listening to podcasts where the people had built, you know, $5, $10, $20 million portfolios and listening to how they got there. I had my father who was conditioned me into good money management habits. He would stress always the importance of money decisions and not waste my hard-earned money on expensive liabilities when I was young. And then the father-in-law taught me a world of knowledge and development side of things. So just combining these three things was a powerful learning tool, and it just allowed my knowledge to grow exponentially in the early stages. And I find just listening to people who have achieved what you want to achieve, in this day and age, there's a lot of fake gurus out there teaching about things they have never achieved. I see people talking about property portfolios and never built one themselves, and I see coaches talk about how to be successful and they've never really been successful themselves, and just say, be careful who you follow. Make sure they have achieved what you want to achieve, because there is a lot of smoke and mirrors out there these days on social media.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just so many scams, unfortunately, as well, too. I mean, just even searching through my first marketplace just to buy one little small thing that's like 20, 50 bucks, there's still a scam out there. It's just insane. So you've got to be very careful. So if you met yourself 10 years ago, what do you think you would have said to him?
Ooh, 10 years ago, I would have been 17 years old. Jeez.
Your baby.
I would have said, keep doing what you're doing. You're doing well. Invest early as you can. Ignore the noise. Stay on your course. Keep working out every day. Focus on quality assets, not quantity. Invest in the fundamentals. assets with good proven track records, and don't chase the latest craze, whether that's a suburb or area you see on online. Having two really good properties is better than five average ones. And I would say most people overestimate what they can do in 1 year, but underestimate what they can achieve in 10 years. So had I thought I was going to be here where I was 10 years ago? Probably not. But I don't think anything I would have said would have revolutionized what I was doing at the time. It's just probably a bit more about encouragement and continue what you're doing.
Yeah. So more sort of words of encouragement for the future, because I think at that age, you're still sort of like, okay, I got to decide, you know, how far am I going to go? What am I going to do? So that's really good. So I think, Zach, you've really achieved quite a lot in your still young, early life. You've still got a long time, like a lot of years ahead of you. So I'm really excited to hear what you're looking to do. But what are you most excited about in, say, the next 5 years?
Yeah, we've achieved our first goal, which was to accumulate a nice little asset base here in SA of A-grade foundational properties in our 20s. We're now in the process of developing each of these properties one by one, which will significantly enhance our equity and cash flow positions on them. And then once this has been complete, the portfolio will be in a healthy position with a runway of 20, 30 years of compounding ahead of it, while letting inflation devalue our debt. So it will be in a healthy position there. And eventually I will transfer some of the residential into high quality sort of commercial assets in the later years of my life due to the greater yields and less maintenance it brings. But for now, yeah, it's been happy days. And the goal is in the near future just to sort of help others replicate and buy good properties in the SA marketplace. That's a goal of mine.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, as I mentioned, you really achieved quite a lot in such a young age as well. How much of you do you think is because of your skill, intelligence, and hard work, and how much of it do you think has been due to luck?
I think luck is a result of hard work and preparation. Without those initial 5 years straight of two jobs, researching property every day, like, wouldn't have had the funds and knowledge to deploy into property at a young age. So those initial hard years, there's no secret. That's what's required. Then the initial savings and knowledge didn't happen overnight. Because of that, I was able to act, and I didn't know many 21-year-olds at the time buying property. So I would say you create your own luck by taking action. I'm a great believer in luck, but the harder I work, the more I have of it. So those who think that they found success from luck actually found success from chance. And then they're willing to take the opportunity when that presented themselves. Success is just the intersection of luck and hard work, I find, Tyrone.
Thank you to Zach Ristio, our guest on this episode of Property Investory.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.